Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, today is a special occasion. Special occasion for you and me. Do you have any idea why?
We never have to do this again.
It's a special occasion because I went to the post office box and we have received the largest packages we've ever received. They actually had to go back into the storeroom to get them. They wouldn't fit in our tiny box.
Oh man, I hope one of them is Data's head.
You want to do one last next gen mail call?
Yeah, let's do it.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
All right, well, we have our three packages. Two of them are from the same person, so I'm going to open up the one that's from the one person.
Okay.
This is coming from Pembroke Pines, Florida.
Oh.
And it is in a bubble envelope that says, please do not bend. And my apologies to Pembroke Pines. This appears to have been bent.
Things have been bent, not necessarily by us.
All right. It looks like it's bagged and boarded, but it's of a size that is not comic size. Oh, there's a letter. I'm going to do that first. Adam and Ben, I had hoped to get these to you sooner, but I reside on planet Scotland, a.k.a. Florida, and recently attacked by Hurricane Irma. These honorable mention certificates from the Albuquerque Podcast Festival are meant to let you know, with the completion of the Next Generation portion of this podcast, you can finally rest on the laurels that you so coveted. I also thought you might enjoy this preview issue of the Mirror Broken TNG comic series that is set in the Mirror Universe.
Hey.
This is from our friend Perry in Florida. Let's see what we got. Oh, wow. And true to his word, we have Albuquerque Podcast Festival Honorable Mention Awards to both you and me. These are like big laureled posters, Ben.
Oh, man.
And they're even signed. They're signed by J.L. Pipes, Pat Cosby, Batman, Big Rod, Kevin Uxbridge, and a Klingon character written in Klingon.
Oh, man.
And we each get one. That's real sweet.
Nice not to be in the pocket of Big Rod, but yet given an accolade by Big Rod.
And there's also that first Mirror Broken comic. That's great. Thanks, Perry.
Oh, man. You were looking for that recently.
On our tour,
we went into a couple of comic book stores with you having a mind to try to get that first issue.
I had some kind of mind on that tour.
Yeah.
All right. Well, two more packages. I'm gonna get to those, Ben. These remaining boxes are from one person, but they are very different. One is a poster tube, and one is a box. So.
Oh, okay.
One of them is a toy box, Ben. Let's see if I can glean anything from the letter. Adam and Ben, I hope you receive these packages without them getting lost. This box contains some of my favorite things from over the years. My favorite is the talking Riker in the Fistful of Rikers bag.
What?
Why only Rikers? Well, why not? Some cards, some books, some awesome. The posters I've sent you have a bit of a story. The two copies of the Birdsong prints came into my possession by a former employee of the print house commissioned to do the run. They were assigned a numbered run, and the printer was to destroy all but the number requested. Someone working there obtained free copies of the overrun, and two ended up with me. Big Rod might not be happy with these unauthorized copies.
Yes.
So tell and or give out at your own risk. I just don't want to get anyone in trouble. These posters are 100% legal. Love the pod. Have been a viewer for a while. Hoping you guys keep going. From Don.
Man.
Oh, boy, Ben. There is no joke. A bag full of Rikers here. We have a talking Riker.
Shields up. Red alert. Energize.
Oh, wow. And there is a bag of Rikers. There's four Rikers in this bag, Ben. Four Rikers.
You guys are as dumb as a bag of Rikers.
we've told people over and over again, do we love you, but please do not send us your old toys. And at this moment, I regret ever saying that. Oh, wow. And we have Star Trek First Contact scented bubble bath. And the package that it comes in is a Borgs.
He's a Borg.
Sort of a Borgs figurine filled with bubble bath.
What is the smell?
It isn't open. It's still in its original packaging, Ben.
What does that movie smell like?
It probably smells like that plasma coolant tank they break at the end.
Yeah, that stuff that vaporizes organic matter.
Oh, no! Ah!
That would be great if that's what it was. If it was green.
Yeah.
Wow.
Assimilate that.
I've got to open the poster thing, too. We have a very cool Star Trek poster. Sort of a picture taken facing a space helmet, and in that space helmet's reflection is the flag on the moon, the Earth, and the Enterprise A zooming toward the camera. Oh, wow! A Star Trek Generations calendar poster, 1995, featuring the floating heads of Kirk and Picard.
Nice.
Very cool. And finally, what we have here are prints of a really cool, arty poster of the entire crew and an artistic depiction of the entrepreneur and a bunch of cool planets. It is The Next Generation by Keith Birdsong.
This is one of our illegal posters?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Wow. Well, that was just a ton of gifts on the occasion of our final Next Generation episode, Ben.
Yeah, Adam, we thought we would class this occasion up a little bit and pop some bubbly to celebrate this, our final TNG episode. What do you say we pop into the bubs?
Yeah, let's do that. I have not pre-unwrapped.
Oh yeah, you gotta get that little foil and whoa, hey.
What a nice sound and pop that was.
Oh man. Got a little bit of it on my hand, but it's all good.
You can just grab a Kleenex or a washcloth and wipe that off, Ben.
Yeah. Well, the main thing was not getting it on the carpet because, Adam, I am sitting in the remnants of an apartment at this point. Hey.
My pop was a little less explosive.
Worked for me.
Cheers to you, buddy.
Cheers. It's been a great run, buddy.
It sure has.
My whole life is in boxes right now because we got packed up this morning for our move cross country, and all that remains is my podcasting station so that we could record this episode.
That's great. You also sound a little bit throaty. Sounds like you've been fighting something.
Yeah, I've been sick as a dog in bed for like 3 days, and
that's a good time to get sick, the days when you're maybe needed most.
Yeah, it kind of perfectly parallels with the 2 days I was sick immediately preceding my wedding.
Oh yeah,
this morning my wife basically came in and like I was trying to kind of like take her easy on the bed, you know, not exert myself, and she basically was like, you're not allowed to be sick anymore. You need help.
Not allowed.
Sometimes having something that needs to be done is what gets you out of the sick bed.
Sure. I also thought to tell you that you were not allowed to be sick this week, Ben, because we had very important pod work to do.
We sure did. It feels strange. Like, we've got our new show going now. Seems to be off to a pretty good start, although we forgot to do Drunk Shimoda on the second episode, which is like, I'm pretty sure because I was coming down with this and not paying attention.
I think that mistake totally underscores the haste with which we recorded those episodes. Like,
yeah,
we recorded and released that show basically in a 24-hour period with the help of Rob Schulte, and yeah. It was a miracle it even happened.
Yeah, it'll get better as we go forward, like all podcasts.
One more miracle is the idea that we even got to this point, Ben.
Yeah.
the final episode of Star Trek The Next Generation for our particular podcast, and soon to be the beginning of another show hereafter. Season 7, episode 25/26. All good things.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Worf and Troy are on a date. It seems like this is probably dinner then a movie date, not movie then dinner.
If your date takes place on the holodeck, can't it be both?
Can it? Does the holodeck make food you can eat and is food?
I want to think so.
Or is it just making holograms? Does it have replicators in it?
I wonder if holodeck technology is a weird way to have an eating disorder. Like in the way that there is the eating disorder where you eat and then make yourself throw up, like to trick your body into the idea of it being full and having consumed calories. Like, I wonder if there's a version of an eating disorder where you eat on the holodeck and then leave.
Holorexia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be weird.
Worf is looking gaunt. He's got bad body dysmorphia, and I think it stems to his holorexia.
You can tell what sort of dark episodes we would have written about this show. Worf's, a very special episode of Star Trek The Next Generation featuring Worf's eating disorder.
So this date is kind of moving bedroomward. And they're about to do a hallway smooch, which is, that's kind of the kiss on the stoop before you discuss whether or not you're going to come upstairs for coffee, right?
Sure. And also, if that stoop is in front of all of your coworkers and friends, like,
right.
In order to kiss outside the quarters, like, what you're really doing is making it public. And it's unclear at this point if it has been made public.
Yeah. Well, they don't get quite as far as tonsil hockey because Captain Picard, Bedeep Veed, comes rushing over to them asking, what's the date?
Lophus interruptus. This is a really long robe, Ben. This is like a duster-length robe.
I recently rewatched the Batman movie with George Clooney.
Oh, no. There's no reason to watch a Schumacher, Ben.
I know. It's a really remarkable movie because that basically has no sense of when somebody shouldn't be doing an action movie quotable. Like, almost every single line is an action movie quotable.
Yeah.
It's amazing. There's a scene in that movie where Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze is using his freeze suit to blow a hole in a wall by freezing the water in some pipes. And he does an action movie quotable of, always winterize your pipes. It's like, that's the stupidest fucking thing that has ever been typed into a typewriter.
Like, who's he even talking to? It's such an eye roll from everyone else in that room.
Yeah, so Picard explains to Troy and Worf that he's like slipping around in time, and we go to a scene where Picard is like in therapy with Troy. I guess this is Captain's quarters, right?
She doesn't walk him back to his quarters, but their quarters are very close to one another.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Well, anyways, he's saying that he's slipping into the past and into the future, and he's doing that thing where he's kind of trying to describe a dream, but it's slipping through his fingers as he describes it.
No, it was much more than a dream.
It's an interesting status flip, because usually when Troy is helping Picard with an emotional thing, he's still the captain, and she's still kind of lower status as a character.
Sure.
This is like her, she's really the high status character in this scene. He's very out of sorts and frantic.
He needs her medically in a way that previously he mostly needs her professionally.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the way that characters on this show frequently treat each other, instead of treating him with some amount of self-defense or fear, they are totally taking his word at face value.
Yeah, earned credibility on this topic, I guess.
Sure, because on its own, the captain of the flagship displaying flagging mental faculties would be cause for alarm. But there is no alarm at this point, and I think that's important tonally.
Yeah. Well, it is in this scene that we do our first cut to the future, and it's elderly Picard with a beard and a straw hat doing some vineyard work. He's back in...
He's back in the crying fields.
Back in the mud fight fields. Yeah, Geordi has shown up.
Hello, Captain.
At the vineyard.
They almost immediately start doing exposition on each other. And one of the ways that happens is Picard asking Geordi how his wife and kids are. And it's clear at this point that Geordi has married Leah Brahms.
Probably the most troubling romantic pairing this show could have gone for.
For Geordi to end up with her after what he did only serves to encourage people like that asshole playing the piano in the park every day to get his girlfriend back. Like, it's not right and it's not cool. She has no reason to be with him. I don't think there's any coming back from that, Geordi.
I don't think I get used to that.
It seems like the reason Geordi is there is to say goodbye to Picard. Geordi's heard that old man Picard is sick. He's sick with a syndrome that's going to deprive him of his mental faculties. And there's a sadness throughout their interaction that I think feels familiar to a lot of people with older folks in their family who are declining. Like that feeling of like seeing someone one last time before it all goes away is one of several parts in this episode where I think the show is talking about itself.
Oh yeah. You know, we're not going to come from Rigel 3 for any old reason, Adam.
Yeah. You just love the taste of that Picard wine. Maybe that's the reason.
Yeah. Geordi's like, oh, shit, taste, that, Geordi. The hookup's about to go away. I better get my ass back there.
Before he forgets to mail me cases every month.
What kind of champagne are you drinking there, buddy?
I got something special for the occasion, Ben. I got a bottle of Veuve.
I am drinking a shameful Moet Mini.
Well, I am obligated to drink this entire bottle by myself, so...
Oh, no.
Things could get pretty weird later on.
They go from this to Picard in the past, like on the shuttle on his way to the Entrepreneur for the first time with Tasha Yar.
And then they're on their way to the first day on the Enterprise D.
Yeah, and Picard has not really divulged in the future timeline and the past timeline to people what's going on. And this is Tasha Yar, like, first time meeting him mode.
Yeah.
He's acting very weirded out by the disconcerting time displacement situation, but she's interpreting it as, like, did I fuck up already?
No. Just that you look very familiar.
This episode handles time travel really well because there has been such a change in uniforms throughout the years and an incoming and outgoing of cast members that it makes it easy. There's a shorthand here visually for knowing in what time period you're in that I think a lot of shows would have a harder time with.
Right. They do the really easy things, but they also do the subtle things, you know, like the bridge looks the way it did in episode one and...
My favorite change seeing the past bridge is how much further reclined Khan and Ops are up front. Like, holy shit, they are reclined all the way back in those early seasons compared to the later ones. That's so fun.
Yeah, that change must have happened really subtly because I don't really remember when it changed.
Yeah.
It's also fun
so
to see
laid back.
Data at the other side of the bridge, which like totally happened in the first season and was like never really explained.
Yeah.
Was Ops just over there sometimes? Like, can those be reconfigured to... I mean, I imagine they're just kind of general use screens that you can set up to be whatever you need them to be, right?
That wood panel basement look in those early seasons too, man. Mm-hmm. What a callback.
Yeah, it's cool that they had the stained glass beer logo light over the pool table, you know.
Yeah. They also they mess with the lights here too, and by that I don't mean the lights on the bridge while the ship is operating. I mean the studio lights that they use to light the people. Like,
yeah.
It also looks like it's changing throughout the different time periods.
Totally.
What has been established is these three time periods: the Farpoint mission era, the like present day from our perspective watching the show, and then 25 years in the future when everybody's kind of like grown apart and gone their different directions. And so those time periods kind of continue in parallel, and our way of jumping between them is when Picard's consciousness jumps between them. But it's not like he's not in the different time periods, right? Like every time he jumps from one to another, Dr. Crusher will be like, oh, like you got the memories of like 13 minutes, but you were just here for 30 seconds.
Yeah, in the beginning, it's really hard for them medically to tell if what he's describing is the truth. It takes a little bit of time to get to that point because they keep doing scan after scan on him, and it takes him doing a jump in front of Beverly for her to get that on the tricorder.
My theory about why this was so hard, I don't know if you noticed this, Adam, but in this scene, Beverly is holding an iPad, and it's totally bent.
Like what the big iPhone was supposed to do in our back pockets?
Yeah, it's like it's seriously warped out of control. And it was like all I could focus on in the scene. I was like, I know that this is the last episode, guys, but that prop is really fucked up.
There are on-screen props, and then there are off-screen props, or like deep background props. And this seems
right.
Like it was a background prop that was field promoted to on-screen when maybe it shouldn't have been.
Yeah, like Ogawa is like walking up with it, and it's like, no, just stay in the background with that thing. She passes it to Crusher. It's like, fuck.
Now I got this thing in my hands. What am I going to do with it? While we're talking about Crusher, another piece of continuity we should talk about is her eye makeup, in that she is bandit eyeshadow levels of darkness around her eyes in the present time period.
Where's my bandit hat?
And I thought a lot about why that would be, because I can't remember her wearing that much eye makeup before. But I think it's because in the future timeline, she's wearing very little eye makeup. And, I mean, that obviously makes her look older in a way that's effective for the storytelling.
Yeah, it didn't register for me, but now I'm like scrubbing through and I'm seeing it. So nice catch, buddy.
This is what we do.
This is what we do.
It's the Star Trek hair and makeup cast.
No thing about the way Troy or Crusher will go unscrutinized by us.
It's a fairly emotionally weighty scene when Picard relives that first day on the D.
It is an emotionally weighty scene because he's come back from the future with this kind of like half remembered dream knowledge that he has this neurological disorder. And he's gotten Crusher to like, you know, open up the hood and do a neural scan that would never normally be done. And she has found the like anomaly in his frontal lobe that will ultimately become this disorder.
Do you think this is Borgs related?
Oh, like when they pulled something out, it caught on something?
There's no way his brains weren't damaged either from the implants or their removal, right?
I mean, I don't know enough about Borg physiology, Adam, to make a determination like that. But what is really intense is Dr. Crusher's like complete abandonment of bedside. Like the captain winds up kind of bedside mannering the doctor about this.
Yeah.
He's like,
I prefer to look on the future as something which is not written in stone.
There's like the bravery of a patient that he displays here.
A bit of a conveniently vague syndrome. It's like in the film Batman and Robin, Adam.
I was hoping we would talk more about this movie.
Mr. Freeze's wife suffers from McGregor syndrome, and of course, Alfred has just come down with a bad case of McGregor syndrome, which sets up a dramatic payoff in the end when they can kind of turn Freeze to the good side and therefore save the life of Alfred. But it's never really discussed what McGregor syndrome is, and the extent to which it's depicted is just Alfred wincing in pain every so often.
I don't want to bury you, Batman. I will not.
The neurological disorder, I don't even remember what it's called, that Picard has in this episode is...
Irrumatic syndrome.
It's not dementia. Like, he's not losing his marbles. It has no symptoms, as far as we know.
Ben, if the Schumacher Batman films were canonical Next Generation films, they would still be the second best Star Trek The Next Generation films. Isn't that fucked up?
Man.
That is messed up.
You know, like I was thinking about it when I was watching it, and...
You did something most people didn't by doing that, by the way.
I know that, like, the studio is trying to kind of continue the Tim Burton, Nouveau German Expressionism of the first two Batman films. But what it really plays like is more like the 1960s Batman TV show in those right. Schumacher movies, which is kind of awesome in its own way. Like, it's unintentional, but it's awesome.
I don't remember that many nipple suits being in the classic Batman and Robin television series.
I think, didn't Adam West, just a little, like, a subtle line on his spandex suit to indicate a nip?
The past wasn't as nippular.
So we continue in this time period, and Picard gets an important FaceTime from the Admiralty. So important that he takes the call in the doctor's office, doesn't even leave six bay, doesn't get out of his deep V, and it's Admiral Nakamura telling him that there is a pretty bad situation a-brewing in the neutral zone.
Nakamura tells Picard that
it appears that at least 30 warbirds have been pulled from other assignments and are headed for the neutral zone.
And Nakamura, in all his intelligence, says,
I am deploying 15 starships along our side of the neutral zone.
What the fuck, Nakamura? This is an insane plan.
Brimming with the kind of confidence that you shouldn't have.
Picard, even though he's rocking a deep V robe, should have been like, I've done the math on this. It appears we'll be outgunned 2-1. Like,
now, Admiral, I'm not a mathematician.
Do you think if Nechayev had this plan, Picard would have pushed back?
No, because Nechayev would have been I've sent 100 ships.
Yeah, look, if we're ranking admirals, it's Nechayev and then Nakamura. Nakamura is like in 20th place in all the admirals we've seen based purely on his insane plan here.
Yeah. Bad plan, Nakamura.
Also, if you know for a fact that the Romulans are sending 30 warbirds, you know there's an extra 60 of them that are cloaked, right? Like, there's no way that there's just 30. It's crazy.
Yeah, so there's this temporal anomaly in the Devrin system. Everybody wants to get in on the action, and the Admiral is sending Starfleet out to the edge of the neutral zone just to keep an eye on the situation, make sure the Romulans don't do anything that would violate the treaty or whatever.
Right, because at this point, this is not an existential threat right now. It's just a curiosity.
You see, Rudy, if this threatened the household, or in the case of this metaphor, the Federation... we would take much greater precautions, but as the planet is not inside the house, but is in the neutral zone, Theo, we'll just keep an eye on the matter. I'm your father.
A very cautious Picasby there. Typically not his way.
I've been sick. My throat is fucked up. I can't get that out of control with Picasby today, Adam.
Way to come off the bench. This is your Michael Jordan flu game. Ben.
Sometimes Picasso is just about good fatherly advice.
Sometimes you only find out many years later how unfatherly that advice was.
It's a guiding principle with Darth Vader's face. Have you got to find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So, in the future timeline, Geordi and Picard have gone to see Data, who is at Oxford University. Data, who has a silver streak in his hair, a velvet jacket, and is surrounded by like 15 cats in his office, is enjoying the company of his old comrades and sort of like trying to grok what it is Picard is saying. Ben, this office must smell like hell. Like there is no future technology I can think of that would make an office filled with 15 cats smell anything less than cat box, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of absorbent surfaces in this office. And, you know, the, like, lower class helper lady that Data has, like, hobbling around serving everybody tea is definitely not the type to, like, call anybody's attention to a smell.
She can be frightfully trying at times, but she does make me laugh.
He treats her so flippantly, and she treats him so subserviently. I sort of thought that she might be a hologram.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, because what purpose would there be for an older lady to be, like, the tea-serving person? She should be an ensign on a galaxy-class starship. We know that that's a career track that exists.
Right. This takes place in a utopian future, like the future of the utopian future at that.
Sure.
Why this life of subservience for this poor woman?
I don't know. And she's really taking a lot of guff from Data.
Yeah. He treats her like Trump treats the Secret Service.
I doubt this old lady would take a bullet for him, though.
Well, he's bulletproof in this timeline, Adam.
Right.
Yeah, I think Spriner makes a really strong set of choices with how he plays Data. Like, his character is maybe the most different across the three time periods.
Yeah.
And like, he's very like loose and casual and emotional in this scene. It's like a very natural portrayal of a character.
Yeah, like the best actors on Star Trek play in the margins a lot, and Spiner's getting the opportunity to do things like use contractions and smile and just facially emote a little more than he ever has as Data. But he's not a 10 out of 10. Like, he's not song and dance man Brent Spiner as Lore, for example. Like, he hasn't gone right full Lore, and I think that's important.
And it's so cool too, because he, like we see this before we see his episode one era Data, and his episode one era Data is like a dead ringer for his episode one Data. So it also brings into relief how much he has changed over the 7 years, which is a pretty amazing feat. Like as an actor, like he really changed without us noticing any like dramatic differences from episode to episode, season to season.
That point is great, but I do want to remind you of mudflap hair that Data had in like the first season and a half. I was really missing the sort of
There's bad mudflap continuity, and there's also bad loaf continuity on Worf.
Yeah.
Worf's loaf is fully season 7 version.
Did they throw out the old loaf and the old Data wig?
Maybe they're on the trash heap of history, my friend.
In the past timeline, Picard is trying to use what he's gleaned in the present and future timeline as instruments in his decision making. But what isn't working in his favor is that he keeps delegating incorrectly. Like, he's delegating security shit to Worf.
With all due respect, sir, I'm the security chief on the ship.
He's calling O'Brien Chief.
Chief O'Brien.
And everyone around him is sort of looking at each other like, what the fuck? Which I think is really fun, right? Like Picard is not acting crazy, he's just acting wrong, which is its own brand of crazy.
Yeah, and like, I mean, he is having delusions. Like, in all of the timelines, I think at this point, he's seen the, like, ruffians from the film Strange Days yelling and laughing at him.
Right.
But it's definitely like the crew of the season one Enterprise that gets the hardest job, because he basically like puts the ship on red alert the second he walks aboard and, you know, holds a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Demanding for them all to like tell him what the fuck is going on, and none of them know what he's talking about. And they get orders from Starfleet to go to the Devron system in lieu of their initial orders. And he's like, fuck that. We're going to Farpoint. We're doing Farpoint.
This indicates that he's going to go find Q. Like, he has not said it, but he knows Q is involved, and the Farpoint station mission is the way to make contact with him.
Yeah.
Which is, like, if you're thinking about his character, is a really smart move. Like, there are very few omnipotent characters in this universe. Q is one of them. I mean, I suppose they could go to Planet Kevin.
Captain Picard, I've been waiting for you.
In any time period, I have a great amount of respect for you, Captain Picard.
And though this has not come to pass yet, I will come to owe you one, because you choose not to prosecute me for my horrible crime.
I want you to know, Osho, that I'm rooting for the success of your mission, because if this temporal
that's hard to say in Kevin voice.
If this temporal anomaly continues to grow, it will swallow up my planet and my dear Rashan.
If humanity is not allowed to arise on planet Earth, then Rashan will never be born and never die. But perhaps worse, there will never be a market for my rubber doll business.
One great thing about this subspace time anomaly is that it will also kill the Hooshnak.
Wiping the slate clean for me morally.
If I'm just doing the math on this, I might be okay with just letting that thing play out.
You know, I put the Hooshnak in one hand and Rashan ever existing in the other, and it's just kind of even money at this point.
Yeah, so given his choices, Picard goes and seeks out Q.
That's the smartest thing you could possibly do.
My love is a fever, longing still for that which longer nurseth the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
There is a moment about halfway through this episode where, in the present timeline, Picard and Beverly are in his ready room, and Beverly has disclosed to him that, yeah, like, his fears about declining mental faculties in the future are founded. And, I mean, there is a chance that something bad could happen. And she kisses him. And in doing that, Beverly looks at Picard like I think we all do at this moment, like, pre-grieving the eventual loss of a great character. And I found this scene totally powerful.
It's a kiss goodbye in a lot of ways.
This was the second part in the episode where I felt like the show was talking about itself. Right after this kiss, old Picard wakes up in the future timeline with what I have to believe is a total sundial in his pants.
I should have gone for a boob, Data. She probably would have let me touch a boob.
Like, you can tell he's sort of favoring that side. He hasn't rolled over all the way to reveal the sundial.
Yeah. I love that, like, old man taking a nap thing. Like, oh, yeah, you can kind of get away with sleeping anywhere. And more to the point, you can kind of get away with a boner anywhere.
Right.
Oh, Gramps.
Old people can do anything. I can't wait to be an old man.
Mm.
We've slagged on the olds on the show quite a bit, but truth be told,
it's because of jealousy. Yeah.
I think we're already great old men.
We do have that way about us, don't we? Well, it is in this boner scene that he hatches the plan for them to meet up with Beverly. Which is, he wants to go to the neutral zone and you know, Riker, Admiral Riker is pretty quick to tell him to take his trip to the neutral zone and shove it.
I love that future Riker looks like Orson Welles. Like, he's like jowly,
yeah,
and angry. H has not been kind to him.
Admiral Riker has like a lot of color still in his beard and like silver fox hair, but in our timeline, Frakes has gone Grecian formula hair, white beard.
It's instructive to see that real Riker looks a lot better than fictional future Riker, and real Riker is older than future Riker.
Yeah, Frakes right has been taking better care of himself.
He looks great. We should be so lucky.
We should. Yeah, so like the future timeline is kind of all about how Picard has a bunch of relationships from the past that conveniently allow him to get to where he wants to go, because the doctor has become captain of a medical ship, which is allowed to go into what was once the neutral zone and is now Klingon-controlled space, because the Klingons have conquered the Romulan Empire. And Worf is now like a regional governor in the Klingon Empire and a former council member. So he has like a lot of political power.
It would have been interesting to know more about what happened to precipitate this. Like, the idea of the Klingons winning a war for territory against the Romulans seems fairly far-fetched in 24th century Federation canon, you know? Like, they're still reeling, their houses are in disarray, like, Gowron is not displayed the acumen that makes me think that he could lead any sort of protracted war with anyone else.
Well, a lot can change in 25 years, you know?
Yeah, sort of a lot has.
I like the 25 years in the future uniforms a lot.
Me too. So, past Picard arrives at Farpoint Station, and Q isn't there, and this really pisses off Picard, because he's doing that thing where he's like screaming to the sky on the bridge.
Q! We're here! This has gone on long enough.
The rest of the crew's looking at him like, oh boy, we've got a crazy captain on our hands. Maybe we should turn back and trade him in for a new one. Picard finally like stomps off into the ready room where he actually finds Q. Q reveals himself to him after he goes off alone.
Yep, and it is the Hall of Judgment from Season 1, Episode 1.
This scene underscores something that begins halfway through the episode and then carries all the way through the end, which is like the idea that Q observes a sort of personal prime directive, in that he interferes to the point that he helps people help themselves without interfering to the point where he's giving them the answer. And to me, that is far more constructive of a way to go than the actual prime directive.
It's letting you know that there is an outcome without letting you, like, you know, take the test with the textbook.
Q's like, I'll give you 10 yes or no questions. Shoot. And Picard's like, well, this anomaly seems involved, is it? He's like, yeah. Is this the Romulans' fault? Is it their way of getting one over on the Federation? He's like, nope and nope. And they finally get to the point where Q tells Picard that this is all his fault somehow. And what will result is the end of humanity. Picard will destroy humanity. Which would be the second time that the destruction of humanity could potentially be Picard's fault. Lest anyone forget, Picard was a Borg.
Picard's a Borg!
Yeah, also kind of Q's fault.
Sure. So Q does a thing in this scene that I also want to talk about, which is he accuses Picard of squandering the efforts of humanity. The trial continues. That's the big reveal, that it never ended. And in the third way that I think the show is talking about itself, I sort of thought that Q represented television culture, in that his accusations seem like those of someone who would critique the show. You had all this potential. You had the foundation of a great science fiction television series. Was your effort successful for these 7 years, or did you squander that? That's what this scene made me think.
I don't know if I would put that much sophistication on the script.
Sure.
I mean, I like your read, but I don't know if it's intentional. Like, it may be there unintentionally, but I guess that's impossible to speculate about.
I'm really going for Alan Sepinwall's job in this final episode. That's what I'm doing.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
All right, so we are into episode 2 of All Good Things here. And it sort of starts with this McLaughlin group.
Issue 1.
For our purposes, present day. And Adam, that fucking bent iPad is on the goddamn table in front of Picard.
Just rolling around on the table.
How the fuck did that get into two different scenes?
I mean, I can only guess that people's attentions were divided because Berman and Braga wrote this episode at the same time they were writing Generations, and they were actually in production on Generations at the same time that they were filming this finale. Did you know that?
Whoa.
I cannot believe that there was that kind of crossover.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And they're booting up Voyager at this time, too.
Yeah. So sort of a lot going on. Not that it forgives a prop that shouldn't be on camera, but like sort of a lot was happening.
I read somewhere that during this, like, there was a pretty legendary fight between Pistu and the camera crew on this episode, because he was, like, completely exhausted from having directed the second to last episode and, like, in this, you know, in, like, every scene of this episode, basically.
I like to believe that those fights occurred while he was wearing that open robe.
Four lights!
Yeah.
How'd you like that guy screaming at you?
Dick flops out.
That's a power move.
Yeah. And so the Enterprise D of present day and the Enterprise D of season 1, episode 1, and the Pasteur under the command of Captain Beverly Picard all kind of converge on the Deveron system. And what they find there is that the anomaly in question is three different sizes. In the past, it is really big. In the present, it is pretty big. And in the future, they cannot even detect it. It is so small.
It being larger in the past is really every man's truth, isn't it?
Oh, man. Well, I guess we all age differently, Adam.
This is a very confessional Greatest Generation. It must be because I'm 3/4 of the way through this VOOV. And
yeah.
I'm feeling great.
Adam, did you notice that in the Pasteur, USS Pasteur future, everybody civilian is sort of wearing clothing that looks like it could be the upholstery job in a conversion van?
I did notice that. I also noticed that everyone had calzone hair. Calzone yeah. hair being the uniform code for Star Trek hair in the future.
Yeah, the that's called the Brahms rule.
Yeah. Just give me the Brahms.
I think that there's like a lot of like plotty detail here, but basically they all like kind of push through whatever little hurdles are put in their way and start to tachyon beam this anomaly, which leads to Q taking Picard to the protolithic Earth.
France, about 3.5 billion years ago, give or take an eon or two.
And Picard looks up and sees the anomaly, and it is enormous. It is filling up the entire sky, and Q is like, yeah, back in this time period, it fills up the entire quadrant.
And Picard is like, oh, I get it. It gets bigger the further back in the past you go.
Congratulations.
If you're a character that rolls his eyes a lot, like this is like a softball into Q right now that he just smashes.
Yeah.
Like when the viewer is impatient with Picard, just like Q is, like that's you're putting Q on the viewer's side.
So what Q is saying is that this is when life arose on Earth. This is when amino acids combined to form a protein. This is it. And he says that this anomaly has caused it not to happen. Picard is getting a lot better at like traveling between timelines at this point. Like every time like super future Data comes up with something, he'll like take that information and give it to past Data or present Data and put it into action. And that's how they come to all be pointing tachyon beams at this thing. And meanwhile, like, you know, a lot of shit is popping off in each timeline. Like, in the future one, they're getting attacked by Klingons, and the Pasteur is badly damaged, and Riker on the tricked-out Enterprise-D with three warp nacelles comes to the rescue.
You're going to need an extra two Starfleet personnel for that extra nacelle, Ben.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to staff that thing up.
Yeah. We're getting a third Siberia.
You're getting a third softball team is what you're getting.
And so we've got three Ds pointing three tachyon beams at this thing. And I think Picard is basically going through this whole episode wishing to fuck that Guinan was around to just explain everything to him.
Oof. No kidding. Here's the thing. If you introduce Whoopi into the show, you counterpoint Q in a way that that might reveal the mystery too much, right?
Like, I guess
part
so.
Part of the effectiveness of, of this episode is keeping the viewer in the dark.
But we would have had one last opportunity for her to do that karate stance where she, like, goes, like, crouching tiger style on Q.
I do like that karate stance.
After the future D does some right angle space combat to the Klingons and they get all these tachyon beams firing, it becomes clear to Picard that, like, you know, through seeing what's happening in the past, that it's a paradox. Like, the tachyon beams that they're shooting are creating the anomaly. And, you know, if they hadn't been shooting these tachyon beams to get a load of what was causing the anomaly, nothing would have caused the anomaly to begin with, Adam.
This is information that's disclosed in Future 10 Forward as Data, Future Riker, Future Geordi, and Beverly are gathered to sort of share with each other the concerns that they have about diminished Picard and how none of them really believes his deal. The doors to 10 Forward fling open, and Picard has awoken from his slumber.
I know what's causing the anomaly. We have to go back.
And postulates this to Data.
We caused the anomaly with the tachyon pulse.
Data's the one who gets it. And I think when you're going crazy, you need a Data, right?
Right.
Someone who believes you in spite of how crazy it is.
Right. Somebody who can look at the information on its face and not the crazy person ranting it at you.
Damn it, I'm not stupid!
One of the things they also talk about at this table is how Riker and Worf are estranged. Estranged because, I guess in this time period, Worf dishonorably dated Deanna. Deanna then died. And then at their funeral, Worf and Riker had some sort of falling out that has caused them to have a rift in their relationship for the 20 years that followed. And Beverly is like, look, man, it's time to put that water under the bridge. You guys are buds from back in the day. You used to be best friends. You used to go around saying that all the time.
You used to be high five buddies, and now look at you.
Now Worf's sitting at the bar alone. Riker's with the gang. This is a real sad scene.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it kind of makes it seem like because Riker's with the gang, Worf can't be, which is a real dick move on Riker's part, you know?
This is the fourth time in the episode where Riker almost turns to camera and he's like, you think you have all the time in the world? He's talking about Deanna, but when I watch this finale, I'm thinking about the show. Like, you think you're going to do this fun Star Trek podcast forever.
Yeah.
And then you end the show it's about. It's too bad. It's truly sad.
Well, one thing that's different about our show than television is that, like, from what I've heard and read, like, when you get a television show past the pilot stage and you go to series, like, that first season is make or break, but then your second season is also make or break, and you're in that mindset, like, the entire time, so you never stop and think, like, hey, like, we've been doing this for 5 or 6 seasons now. This is great, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can never really be comfortable that it's going to keep going. And that's, I mean, like, I have really enjoyed doing this project with you because I feel like we could kind of get a load of the arc of it as we were doing it. Like, a bunch of times we've been able to get together and be like, can you fucking believe this?
Yeah, I think what's great about our show, Ben, is that it'll be in syndication forever.
Yep.
Great success.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
The Picard has to convince his three crews to cut it out with the tachyon beam, but not just that, go in and start a static warp bubble within the anomaly, which will presumably seal it shut. And like super future Data is on board with this immediately because it's his idea. But then Picard has to convince the other Datas of it. And the hardest pill to swallow is for the, you know, early episode one crew who are like, hey man, like none of us know you. And like, sure enough, there's a fucking anomaly here, despite the fact that like you don't seem to be entirely in control of your faculties. You like found the anomaly that you've been ranting at us about, but now you're asking us to go in and like use our ship to plug the hole. That seems crazy, man. And he's like, listen, guys,
I know it is difficult for you to understand that we have to take the ship into the very center of the phenomenon.
This is how we save humanity.
I've told you before how I don't believe Picard is the best captain in Star Trek, if you were to make that list. But this is a scene that makes the case that he might be. Like, he has to marshal his crew into the idea that the suicide mission is something that makes sense.
I know you have your doubts about me. About each other. About the ship.
He knows the future in this scene. None of them do. You and I do, Ben, watching the show. We know how great everyone's going to become. But no one there believes that yet, and Picard has to tell them.
Although we have only been together for a short time, I know that you are the finest crew in the fleet. And I would trust each of you with my life.
It was amazing to watch him tell everyone that we've loved over the last 7 years how great that they would be. And that, to me, is what makes this scene so great.
Now, everybody knows that Captain Janeway makes the best grandiloquent speeches. But what this scene presupposes is maybe Captain Picard does?
Box checked. So all three ships from all three time periods have to go into this thing and make this warp bubble. And it is fraught throughout. It is a rocky ride into the center.
And we watch all three of them go, like in order from furthest in the past to the future. The warp cores go critical. They like do their best to hang on for as long as possible. Q is there on the bridge taunting Picard the entire time.
Goodbye, Jean-Luc. I'm going to miss you. You had such potential.
And finally, Future D goes, and we smash cut to like white light on an overtop shot of Picard, and he's doing like a classic Picard palm face sulk, and and there's Q, Judge Q, and Q has taken on like a very different tone all of a sudden. He's like, hey, like I knew you could do it the whole time,
because the destruction of these three ships has caused the anomaly to fold in on itself. Like, the mission was a success at the expense of all three ships.
Right, but also, like, because it's a time paradox, not at the expense of any of the ships.
Did that cause you not to feel anything when those ships were destroyed?
Yeah, you know, I honestly, like, I think that this is a thing that Brandon Braga is responsible for in Star Trek, which I only associate with the fact that he wrote, like, most of the episodes that do this, but the, like, bullshit timeline scenarios that plague Star Trek from the time that he sort of started being an influential figure on the show to like the end of the Voyager run, I guess, really bother me. And it bothers me that like I like a time travel story, don't get me wrong, but the like ones that kind of like set up their own convenient paradox to be a deus ex machina, like, really bug the shit out of me. And this is maybe one of the most egregious offenders of that.
Now, when you're setting up a time-space paradox, you're going to want to make sure that all your threads of your story line up. That way, your viewer won't poke holes in all the continuity errors.
It does take some of the emotion out of that sequence, and I don't know how you like end a series with the ship actually blowing up.
Containment field isn't critical. I'm losing it.
Like, that would feel really brutal and mean to the viewer.
I thought maybe it would have been felt more if they went in reverse, because the past version of the ship was the ship and the crew that Picard had to work the hardest to convince.
Right.
And if they fell in order of future to past, and if finally in the past ship, everyone starts to express the doubts that they had sort of bottled up until then. Like if Yar had yelled at Picard, "What are we doing here?" before it explodes, I think the emotion of that scene is completely heightened in a way that is credible.
Yeah.
And would really work effectively. It still, as it played out, worked effectively for me, but I wonder if changing the order would have made it even more.
At the end of the day, I can't escape the, like, there's a line where Q says, like, the moment you showed that humanity has any potential was when you figured out the time paradox.
Right.
And it's like, man, like, you can't do that as a writer. You know, like, oh, when you figured out my bullshit fucking writing mechanism to, like, make it, there be a dramatic structure here, that's when you were the best as a character? Great. It's like really patting yourself on the back from the script.
Whoever wrote this story, if there is a creator of this universe, must have been a genius.
Yeah.
To a strange degree, cause and effect was a more difficult puzzle to solve than this one.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
For the crew.
Right.
Q does that cute thing where he's like, I could tell you the secrets of the universe, man, and maybe I'll pantomime like I'm about to. And he does that lean into his ear and then backs away. And then that's it for Q.
See you out there.
And it's almost it for this episode, except for a scene at the end with the senior staff assembled for a poker game, Ben. A poker game that is without Deanna Troi and Captain Picard, but they walk in sequence, and Picard has never attended one of these poker games before, and so when he walks through those doors, everyone sort of stiffens up.
Is there a problem, sir?
Yeah, like captain on deck, kind of little like, oh, fuck, like, what's going on?
Picard, just before this, records a captain's log without giving it the super secret log lockout that he mentioned before in the episode about, like, it appears that no one else in the crew has experienced the crazy time travel thing that I was just going through.
Yeah.
Before this scene, I thought that was fun that that log didn't deserve the double secret lockout that the earlier one did.
I would love to be a fly on the wall at the, like, admirals briefing newly commissioned captains on how captain's logs work. And yeah. Like, yes, even if you have no evidence for an experience you have, you're going to be encountering shit out there that you won't be able to establish evidence for. We need it in log form.
Two kinds of captain's logs you should log out completely with that sort of double secret password. One of them is the I hate Klingons and I always have style captain's log. That's one you should use double secret passwords. And the other one is I've been traveling through time and I appear to be the only one who's noticed.
It's not something that's wrong with me. It's something that's wrong with the universe.
So Picard, newly well, joins the poker game, is invited into the poker game for the very first time. He's given the deck and he gets that moment in the show that the series has teased all along but never has, which is the intimacy of a leader and the led. You know, everyone at this table loves him, and they have from the start. But until this moment, it has never fully been expressed.
I should have done this a long time ago.
You are always welcome.
Because the captain has always been above the social fray. The captain doesn't join the poker game. But when he sits down and plays with them, it shows that he's turned the corner and he wants a relationship with them that is deeper than just beloved captain. And this scene never fails to, in as many times as I've seen it, totally Dawson Leary me at the dock. Like, I'm a total puddle every time I see this scene. It is utterly effective to me. Did you feel that way?
Yeah. I mean, it's the part, the thing that has gotten so right in this episode is is celebrating these relationships and these characters and these storylines that we've loved for 7 years. It knows exactly how much schmaltz to put on these moments without making them overbearing and without, you know, under-celebrating at the same time.
That's exactly, you know,
it. Really threads that needle.
The choice to end the episode and the series here, I think, is so critical in its quality. This is the moment that makes this finale great. It's the moment that makes the series greater than it could have been without it. It's the perfect bookend, I think.
Really spectacular. Did you like the episode, Adam?
I really did, and you and I both know that there are some mistakes here. As with any time travel story, there are holes to poke. Holes like future Picard choosing to inform present Picard of the future, but then choosing to not inform past Picard for reasons of paradox. Like,
right.
He declines to go two steps into the paradox for reasons, I guess. It was Beverly's ship, the Pasteur, that fires the tachyon pulse. It wasn't future Enterprise that did that. There were a lot of like little weird threads that didn't quite add up, but if you're able to look past some of that stuff, I think it adds up into a mountain-worthy episode here. What about you, Ben?
You know, my feelings are too mixed to put it on the mountain. I think that in so many ways it's the perfect send-off for this cast and crew and this ship and this series. And maybe some of that perfection is in where it fucks up. Like, it is like a classically dumb time travel story.
Sure.
Like classic bad Trek and classic good Trek all wrapped up in one double episode. It's like, it really contains multitudes, this episode.
It's really a miracle like that.
Yeah.
Because one more really dumb choice or one terrible line of dialogue, I think, could tear the whole thing down. It's that close.
Yeah. Walks a line for sure. But, you know, it's impossible for me to not think fondly on this episode for all of the things that it does great, because there are many.
It frustrates me because clearly the creators of the show are able to do a long form story, and yet time after time they trip over their feet and fall down the stairs when given a task to write a film. I think this double episode represents one of the top two films that this show has ever made.
I'd put it up there, yeah, for sure.
Well, Ben, much like Picard moving through time, receiving messages from the past and the future, have we, in fact, received messages from the past in the form of P1s?
We have, Adam.
What do you say we read them?
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is from Raven Ryuta. It is for my husband, Mark Ryuta, and the message goes like this. To Mark, with a C, from your wife, Raven, happy anniversary. I'm picturing us together watching The Next Generation every night for another 10 years. You are the heart of my day and the soul of my night. I would boldly go anywhere with you. And I love you so much, Imzadi. 10 years. How many watches of TNG the series can you get done in 10 years?
Man, it sort of depends on how you're watching it.
Well, if you're watching two a week like we are, get up to
You got five watch-throughs under your belt?
Yeah. That's a good way to spend 10 years.
I hope you keep downloading our podcast every single time.
Yeah, much like finding new things in the show, maybe you'll find new things in the pod.
Adam, our second P1 is from Dylan R., and it's for the finest viewers in Podfleet, a.k.a. the GG Tour 2017 Milwaukee folks.
Oh, yeah.
Cliffhanger ahead. My boyfriend and I broke up exactly 3 months before the show. The 3 weeks leading up to the show were hell at work, and a potential employer passed on my application the day before the show. Mm. Suffice it to say, I felt damned low the day of the premature assimilation tour in Milwaukee. Mr. Worf, fire. To be continued. And I believe that there will be a part two to this P1 in an upcoming episode of The Greatest Generation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What a fun way to do it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, if you have a message to send anyone, we'll have you know that Priority Ones are not going away. They're coming with us henceforth into future podcast series.
Yeah, and they're also available on The Greatest Discovery, our sister show.
You can put one of those in the queue by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. And they are a great way to ensure the ongoing production of the show and the enslavement of its hosts. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Ooh, is not the smartest one. Smartest one. Let the boy take over control. Shimoda! Ooh, you make the warp drive hum. Warp drive hum. You gave up the ship to a child. Shimoda! Drunk Shimoda! Take important stuff, stack it up. Doesn't give a fuck, everybody's drunk. And Tasha Yar's getting robot humped. Ben, no! Drunk Shimoda!
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Boy, I did, Adam. That fucking bent iPad!
Prop Shimoda!
Prop Shimoda. How about you, Adam? Did you find a drunk Shimoda?
This might be something that you want to scrub to. I don't have the time code on this, but this is a classic deep background Shimoda for me. Mm-hmm. So in the future timeline, Picard has bursted in his pajamas, and he's like trying to articulate the paradox.
So this is in 10 forward.
Yeah. So in 10 forward, a pajamaed Picard bursts in and walks up to the table where the senior staff is assembled, and he's trying to explain the paradox. But what's happening at the table behind them is an officer is clearly on a date. And when Data gets up, having finally grasped the core of the paradox, the guy in the back clearly does an eye roll and gestures to his date like, let's get the fuck out of here. This sucks. Like, because in whatever time period you're in, you always hate the overly loud table at a restaurant. And that moment to me was like, so pure and good. This fucking guy.
Who let that old in here?
I know. This guy does great background work. I loved seeing him walk out. And then later when the camera angle changes, like you can see them walk out of 10 forward. I just love that.
Amazing. Oh, that's so good.
The guy who wants the table to shut up is my Shimoda.
I love it. That's me. That's me in every restaurant.
I know. Why can't you just be quiet?
I can't relax and enjoy myself under any circumstances in any restaurant.
Oh, man. You and me both, Ben.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
What do we have coming up on the next episode of The Greatest Generation?
Well, so the next episode is going to be just us going back through the series and talking about our mountains and favorite moments in the show and all that good stuff. And I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be like a lot of people have requested this, and we like haven't quite hammered out our plan for it as of this recording. But what we've got planned so far, I'm really excited about.
Yeah, you and me both. It'll be good.
And then after that, we're going to the one-a-week schedule. So that episode will come out for those who are listening in real time. That next episode will come out on October 9th, the Monday following this episode. And then the next episode will be October 16th, which will be the first episode of Deep Space Nine.
Well, Ben, I'm really looking forward to that retrospective. I think it'll be good for us to sort of talk out our feelings on this crazy, fun, unbelievable project in a number of ways. I think at this point in the show, it might be good to just tell you how grateful I am to have done a project like this with you. I think, you know, this began as a unlikely friendship between two people who live on opposite coasts.
Yeah.
And turned into a long-term, hilarious project. But more than anything, like, it got me one of my best friends. And it gave us something to talk about twice a week. It gave us a fun tour to do in which we saw the country together.
Yeah.
It gave us so much in an unlikely way. And I just want to thank you, and I want to thank everyone who has listened to the show and supported the show and have written in to tell us how much it means to them and in their lives, because as much as it means to anyone else, it means double for me. And I think you're a big reason for that, Ben. So I just want to thank you for that.
Hey man, right back at you. I mean, every time we see each other, it just charges me up. You know, I think you're so funny and quick, and I just get just big belly laughs from you every time we hang out. And the fact that we've gotten to kind of share that dynamic in a way that people have responded to has been one of the most gratifying experiences I've ever had. And I think you know we have so many people to thank for helping make that happen. You know, a lot of this was luck and good timing, but a lot of it was other people like really helping us. You know, the folks who wrote articles about us, the folks at MaximumFun.org who took a chance on our ridiculous little show, I feel 1,000% the same way, man. I feel super lucky to have gotten to do this with you. And I'm really looking forward to the future.
Yeah, you and me both. Like, we're not going anywhere, that's for sure. The idea of making professional fun, I think, was the biggest epiphany, was that, like, we could make our fun into a thing that we could do all the time.
Yeah.
And for a variety of reasons, we're now able to do that. And that is something that I'm excited to continue into the future.
So thanks to everybody, and can't wait for the next chapter, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We should thank Adam Ragusa and Dark Materia for the music you hear on our show. We should thank all the people that have participated in the online communities for this show, like especially the folks who created and moderate our Facebook and Reddit groups. Thank you, Austin and Mike, so much. Thank you for all the people that moderate as just volunteers. I mean, like, the community around this show is an amazing thing that we feel incredibly lucky to have, and that is just a gift that keeps on giving. I want to also say thanks to the guys at the Geek Life Crisis podcast who put out an episode where they interviewed a bunch of people from the amazing community of Friends of DeSoto and put together a little tribute episode to this podcast. It was one of the most touching and hilarious things I've ever heard.
That was an out-of-body experience for me to hear that. It was so beautiful to hear the voices from our viewers, like, talk directly to us about how much the show means. So much of this project has been unbelievable, but to be forced to believe it in that form was something I will always be grateful for. So thank you to those guys. at the Geek Life Crisis.
And I think that just about does it. So with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode. Or I guess we won't be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. But we will be back with The Greatest Generation. And that is a wonderful thing.
Greatest Generation forever, pal.
Yeah.
Cheers to you.
Cheers. You kill that bottle?
Going out of the bottle now. Love you, buddy.
Love you, too.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.